This is Economics for Entrepreneurs, the podcast where we apply the principles of economics to help you make the best decisions for your life and business. Here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. Today we're discussing the role of values in successful businesses. That's not to be confused with value, which is the examination of benefit and quality in relation to price to determine whether an offering represents good value for the consumer. No, we're talking about values, those beliefs about what's right, those rules of conduct, those ideal and aspirational standards that people hold themselves to. They're ethical and moral preferences that govern what's an appropriate action and what's not. And those appropriate actions include what it's appropriate to buy, what products or services or brands that consumers choose because they're a good fit with their personal values. Economics is often painted as a cold, calculating science that uses mathematical calculation to make decisions based entirely on profit and margins and cost-benefit analysis. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Economics is the science of how people make decisions. Decisions they make as consumers, and decisions they make as producers. And because they're human, those decisions are subjective, emotional, idiosyncratic, and sometimes inconsistent as people and circumstances change. So economics has to understand subjectivity, emotion, and idiosyncrasies, and take these things into account when explaining how decisions are made. As an entrepreneur, you need to be an expert in analyzing the decisions of your consumers or your business-to-business customers. They're all human, and they're all exhibiting the same emotionality, but they may hold different values. It's the analysis and understanding of those values that we're examining today. Our guest is Trini Amador. Trini is a highly respected global business consultant to some of the world's biggest companies and biggest brands. He's also a consultant to and supporter of local entrepreneurs in his community, Sonoma County in California. And he's the founder and proprietor of his own unique values-based brand, which we'll learn about today in our conversation. Trini, hello.
Hello, Hunter.
It's good to hear you, Trini. Thank you for joining Economics for Entrepreneurs.
Happy to be here.
We're going to begin with your perspective on the decision-making processes that consumers engage in when they're choosing brands, or they're choosing products, or they're choosing services. You're an expert in this field. I know because you've developed professional information about some of the greatest brands and businesses in the world. And without divulging any secrets, I know you've developed tools for identifying consumer motivations and for deriving those motivations from observed consumer behaviors. And that's a tremendous talent and tremendously useful for entrepreneurs, something that everybody needs to learn how to do to be an entrepreneur. So that's where we're going to start. What's the role of values in consumers' decision-making?
Well, that's a great question, and that's a big, big topic. But in order for us to do that, the first thing we need to do and the single most important step is to identify our core target. And that, as you know, many businesses and brand managers believe that the more folks that they target, the bigger their business is going to be. But in fact, that's counterintuitive. In fact, the more narrowly that we target, the better. Do you want to know why?
Tell me.
So the reason is because it's easier to be more meaningfully connect with a narrow group than it is with a larger group. And you've heard the saying, which is you can't be all things to all people. And that's what this means here. So what we do is we start building from that starting point, and that is, let's identify a narrow core target that we can be meaningful to first. Because what we're seeking is these intensely loyal fans. We want our fans to be loyal to our brand and that brand to have deep relevance, meaning that we want that brand to really be meaningful to them and it's needed by them, and that they also understand the differentiation. So that's how different is this brand from something that they already know or this company. And we also want to allow those customers to understand the esteem of the brand. And that is, you know, what what does the brand stand for other than its differentiation and its relevance? And we also want them to have deep knowledge about the brand. And I'd like to give you an example. Can I do that?
Oh, yes, please do. That would be great. We like to give practical examples that entrepreneurs can use.
So you and I just sort of kick back and forth on this because we're both familiar with this brand called Starbucks.
I love Starbucks.
Yeah, me too. So when you think about the relevance of Starbucks, Starbucks is a place that's relevant pretty much to everyone because everyone needs to stop and drop anchor sometimes and go into a place that's convenient to have something to drink. That's a comfortable thing for them to do. They're looking for Wi-Fi. They're looking for food. They're looking for something that is consistent, and Starbucks is there for them. So that's the relevance part. The differentiation is that when you compare other stores that you might go into for a coffee, for example, Starbucks is highly customizable. They'll make pretty much anything for you. The pricing is consistent. They're clean. They always have Wi-Fi. So those are things that help to differentiate Starbucks. It's consistent and you recognize it and understand it. The brand is esteemed, and the reason for that is because in many instances, some people might be interested in a brand that is socially conscious or a brand that takes care of the value chain, meaning the coffee growers are well taken care of. And so there are lots of reasons why people would esteem Starbucks. And then deep knowledge is that Starbucks came up with their own language. People, if you've stood in line in Starbucks and heard what people order, it's quite funny sometimes to hear it out of context, but folks have a lot of knowledge about a Starbucks, and they can talk to you at length about what Starbucks stands for. So these are concepts that help us to start to get to the values.
Just a question about that, Trini. I love your point about the individual language that you find in Starbucks. And I think as a customer, I feel that when I've mastered that language, I've become part of the in crowd. Is that part of the equation, do you think?
Absolutely. There's a big part of community building in Starbucks. So not only when you go to your favorite Starbucks, and I know many of your listeners can relate to this, that you see a lot of the same sorts of people in there that are customers, but you also get to know the folks that are behind the counter. And in fact, many times someone will walk into a Starbucks and you don't even have to order. They just know what you want and they'll ask you if you want the regular, and that's what they make. So that is quite important. But the thing is that all this, you started off by asking about the rules of values, the point that I'm making is that it starts with understanding the target. And then we want to get to something called insights. And insights are, in order to do that, we need those insights. And that's where we start to derive these consumers' subjective values, these invisible, unspoken, unarticulated values from what these consumers are doing, meaning the behaviors. So what do they do? What do they write on Facebook? What are they buying? Who are they hanging out with? So these insights reveal the motivations. In fact, a test of an insight is, does this cause a consumer or a customer to behave the way that they do? So these motivations are shaped by values, and especially something called the highest value. So I can talk to you a little bit about highest values if you're interested in that.
Oh, yes, definitely. But before we go there, let's just make sure we can help people understand this process. It sounds like customers and consumers aren't going to tell us what their values are exactly. They may not be able to articulate that, but we can observe what they do, what they buy, other things that are part of their behavior. We can observe that behavior, and from that, you use the word deduce, I think, what the motivation is and what values are associated with it. Is that right, Trini? Do I have that right? And can anybody do that?
So the answer is yes, it is right, and anyone can do that. So what that basically means is that we're watching the things that they're buying. We're listening to the kinds of questions that they're asking. We are watching and observing the way that they are reacting to us when we're interacting with them to understand what are the things that are drivers to purchase. What are the most important things to them? We can infer what it is that's important to them that way.
Good. Thank you for that. You've talked about deduce and infer. So that tells me it's a mental skill that anybody can master if they apply themselves to it. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it seems, I don't want this to sound scary or spooky or anything. It's not really, it's quite simple. It is a relatively sophisticated value system, but it's very easy to use. And that is that at the end of the day, customers or consumers are trying to achieve a value by doing business with your customers, meaning your listeners, I should say. So whether you're selling a service or you're selling a product, at the end of the day, the customer does want a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Let's use that as an example. But there are other drivers at work here, meaning high values. At the end of the day, is it really the coffee that they're after? Or are they, in Starbucks' case, mostly interested in just comfort? And comfort can be delivered through that coffee, but it can also be delivered through their comfort with the experience in Starbucks, the comfort of being able to customize their individual drink, the comfort of being able to share their community, the comfort of being able to log into Wi-Fi, the comfort of it being consistent, the comfort of being clean, et cetera. At the end of the day, in this case, Starbucks may stand for comfort, but there's a long list of about 18 different values that different brands or products or services deliver on. And I could give you an example of some of those highest values if you're interested.
Good. Yes. Tell us about highest values. It sounds like a further development of this approach that you have.
Sure. I'll mention two or three, and then we'll pick one to talk about. So at the end of the day, a service or a product that you purchase could be delivering an exciting life, or it could deliver a sense of accomplishment or social recognition. So let's choose one of those and talk about a brand or brands that your listeners might recognize that could deliver on an exciting life, a sense of accomplishment, or social recognition. Which one sounds good to you?
Let me pick a sense of accomplishment, because it sounds like that would be very motivational in a really positive sense.
Okay, well, I want your listeners to know that we haven't planned this, so we're doing this on the fly. A sense of accomplishment. So a brand comes to my mind. Does one come to yours?
Well, I can think of Nike, which tells me to just do it. But if I do get up in the morning and I do make that 5-kilometer run and I do get home and go to work, I feel like I've accomplished something, not necessarily in the time that I might do the run in, but I got out of bed in the morning and I did something. Is that a sense of accomplishment?
Sure. I mean, it's not only just about getting out of bed and doing something, but it's about being your best self. And so what you've done is, at one time Nike did stand for success. So at the end of the day, I was, winning. But I think they found that there was a deeper value. There was a deeper understanding of what Nike could stand for. And that was a sense of accomplishment, that it's not just about winning, but it's also about the effort. And so that's why Just Do It is quite important for them. So another brand that comes to mind is the U.S. Army as well. So many people are familiar with the tagline from the U.S. Army, which is be the best you can be. And be the best you can be is just another way of saying that you've accomplished something. You've accomplished the best that you can and being your true self. And so that's another good example. But a sense of accomplishment can be a very important value that folks derive from purchasing a service or a product, in this case, like Nike.
Let's do another one, an exciting life.
Well, the first thing comes to my mind is a car category. So there are some automobiles that stand for an exciting life. I think that in the beginning, when the Teslas came out, they were sort of standing for an exciting life, probably social recognition as well. But a Ferrari definitely would stand for an exciting life. There are other brands that help deliver on that as well.
And sometimes then these highest values, it sounds like, Trini, might come in combinations. You mentioned exciting life combined with social recognition. I buy my Ferrari and I'm excited by driving it, but people also notice when I park it in the parking lot, so I get the social recognition.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And not only that, but, you know, it's Ferrari could be about a sense of accomplishment. It depends. It goes back to this core target discussion we were having. Some targets or some segments of consumers will find that a Ferrari is delivering on an exciting life. Some segments want an exciting life and want people to look at them. So that's social recognition. Others might say it's an exciting life and a sense of accomplishment, meaning I really don't care what others think about me. I'm more interested in the fact that I was able to do this. I deserve this. So I have self-respect. And so, yes, different segments or consumers are trying to achieve different highest values by various products and services.
Here's another question that always comes up when we're talking about values and brands like this. We've talked about consumer brands mostly, and a lot of our listeners will have B2B businesses. And when they're trying to sell the products or services of those businesses, sometimes they've got to go through a procurement committee or fill out procurement forms online or do other kinds of processes to get their product or service purchased. And it doesn't sound like this marketing stuff that we're talking about. Can we apply the same kinds of values and value analysis to customers of B2B businesses?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. And the reason for that is because the customers that you're dealing with are humans. Until robots start making signing purchase orders, I think that humans are making these purchases and they're going through the same process. They want the same truths. They're playing the same role as an employee of a business as they would be as a consumer that's buying for themselves. So that role affects the values that they display in their purchasing behavior. They're competitive by nature sometimes. They may need to save money. They want to express the premiumness of their company or their brand. There's lots of different drivers. They also may want to demonstrate to their boss that they are smart by making these decisions the way that they are. There's efficiency and effectiveness needs that they have. So one brand that comes to mind is UPS. So I might choose UPS and FedEx because I know that those brands are reliable. They have great data. There's wonderful tracking. They have excellent billing, for example, versus a lower cost regional carrier, which may have difficulties with efficiencies, time delivery, and billing, for example. So that's a good example that comes to my mind.
Good. Let's try to help people think about how they'd use this concept of highest values and try to figure out what motivates and drives their customers and their consumers. The word highest suggests that there might be a ladder or a set of layers that gets to the top. I know in economics we have a similar concept. We talk about a nested hierarchy of preferences. You're aiming at one thing, but maybe a bigger thing after you achieve the first one. An example I read about recently was you're setting a nice table for dinner and you want to put the forks and knives and plates in the right place so it looks good. But that's also about the social recognition you talked about, the guests recognizing that you took care for them. There's the idea of a value scale that can go from lower to higher or starting point to an end point. Tell us about how the laddering concept works or how exactly you described it and how it applies to decision making by customers. How do we find out or find our way to that highest value?
Sure. I mean, it's many business owners focus a lot on the features of their product. So if we use a coffee shop as an example, because we already started talking about Starbucks, a typical coffee shop, mom and pop coffee shop might say, gee, I have to have the right price because I'm competing with Starbucks and I have to have the right flavors, for example, and the right sizes of drinks, and I have to be able to manage delivering the product as fast as Starbucks or as efficiently as they do. So a lot of times, business owners really focus on the deliverables. We refer to them as features, the features of the brand, and So it's, but the thing is that a customer is really looking for a lot more than just a feature. They're also trying to understand the attributes of that brand, meaning the non-tangible values of this brand. So that it could be popular, it could be fun, it could be reliable. Those are attributes of a brand which are, or a company which are quite important to a customer as well. So not only is it features and attributes, but you can ladder that up to something called a functional benefit. And the functional benefit is, what do I get out of this product? So a feature might be Colombian coffee, but the functional benefit that it has a certain, a better taste or a more bitter taste, for example, if that's what I like. It might have a more smoother taste. That would be a functional benefit that I get out of that feature. And then you can ladder that up even higher to an emotional benefit, which means, how does it make me feel when I'm tasting this Colombian coffee and it has a smoother taste? How does that make me feel? It might make me feel smart because I know more about coffee than the next person, because I've done my research and I've tried lots of different coffees, Italian blends and French roast and Colombian and Hawaiian and so on. But I found that this Colombian coffee blend is much smoother, and so it meets my taste. And so it makes me feel smarter than the average, or more emboldened because I know more about the coffee category. And then that can ladder all the way up to this highest value that we were talking about. So I'll think about, if I choose Colombian coffee, it's a smoother taste, which is the functional benefit, which makes me feel like I know more about this category. What could that makes me feel that way from an emotional standpoint? What could that ladder up to in the highest value? And I think that it might ladder up to something called wisdom, which is, I feel like I know more about coffee in this particular case than the average person, because I've done a lot of work around this. I've tasted lots of different kinds of coffee and found the one that I like, which might also ladder up to something called social recognition, which we talked about earlier. I'm sort of known in the office as a coffee expert, and anybody knows that about me because I know lots and lots about coffee.
I'm starting to get a picture here, I think, of how I might do this exercise of trying to understand my consumer's highest values. And to use your word, it feels like a ladder. I've got that image in my mind. It feels like you start at the first rung, at the place where you make contact with your customer. So the coffee store or the meeting, if it's business to business. You're trying to present features that the consumer will like. Some of those are non-tangible. I think you called them attributes. So they might be another rung. The benefit question is, do the consumers feel like there's something in it for them? So that's another rung. It's maybe functional, like taste, or you use the word feel for emotional benefits. And that's where we make the link to economics, because we say that consumers make subjective decisions, and that decision is based on a feeling. So that's the economic weapon there, the emotional benefit. And if we can identify that, we can take the customer, take the consumer on that journey towards the top rung and the highest value. Does that sound right, Trini?
Yes, it does. So again, I'm thinking about your listeners right now, and the listener might have a landscape company or might have, I mean, that one just pops in my mind. But the thing is that if I'm mowing the lawn or I'm clipping the trees, but it's how your customer feels when I'm done delivering that service. And I feel like everything's in order. I feel like I can represent in my neighborhood once again. I feel like I fit in. I feel like I just feel better because everything seems to be orderly and clean. And at the end of the day, a highest value that could deliver on would be maybe something like a world of beauty, or it could be something about, a comfortable life. I feel happiness as well. So it's easy for us, for your listeners, to think about what is the service or the product that they're delivering in from a feature perspective. But I want to encourage them to think about, how does their customer feel when their product or service is delivered? And if they have a better understanding of that and use that to help deliver their product or service to their customer, then they will actually be farther ahead than their neighbor or their competitor.
Right. And if you can find that emotional benefit, what came to mind when you were talking was pride. Pride in the appearance of your lawn or your garden. That's the emotional benefit you're talking about, feeling proud.
That's right.
You mentioned brands before, and some of our listeners will be building their own brands, whether it's personal brands or the brands for their business, meaning that they're trying to get that brand premium, that brand recognition that sometimes gets you a premium price. They're trying to get loyalty. They're trying to get the relationship value that comes with a brand. You mentioned brand marketing frameworks, and we talked about Starbucks and Nike and a few others. Just say a little bit, if you would, about how you get from the insight and this highest value that you've been able to identify, the emotional understanding we talked about. How do you use it in the brand? How do you use it in that brand framework?
Right. So it's really deceptively simple. There's so when you're, if I have my company, I want to think about it in two ways. One is, what are the parts that are relevant to my target customer, and how am I different from my competitors? So those are the sort of the two buckets you start with. And on if you think about this in six from a six box perspective, there's six different boxes that we need to tick. And on one side is three boxes are about relevance and three boxes about differentiation. The first thing we started off with, the very first thing at the top of the call, and that was the target, core target. And so in Starbucks' perspective, their core target, they're looking for an active or contemporary citizen of the world. These people are highly connected. They're very tech savvy and they're always on the move. They're innovators in the workforce and they're socially conscious in their worldview. They're always eager for new experiences. That's sort of a description of what a core target might look like for Starbucks if we were building that. And then what are the core insights? So we talked about needs and insights, meaning what motivates that target to behave the way that they do. They connect, they network, they consume, they produce, they work, and they communicate at home and at the office, on the move, or anywhere else. They want to be productive when they multitask. Sometimes they need fuel. Sometimes they just need to stop and drop anchor. They want to feel like they deserve these moments that they take for themselves. That would be what motivates their customer, the customer, to behave the way that they do. And then the last is about competitors on the relevant side, and that is, who am I competing against? And Starbucks is competing against any place that welcomes these active people into their place to meet, to think, to settle, to connect, or to refuel. And then on the differentiation side, it's about, what is the promise this brand can deliver? And the promise is, what is the benefit? What is the benefit that is unique to your business? What is the most unique thing that is a benefit that you can deliver to your customer, primarily from an emotional standpoint, but it can also be functional as well. And in Starbucks' case, it's they're a uniquely comfortable third place that they have designed for you and for your busy life. And what Starbucks means by the third place, people might have heard this before, but Starbucks' belief is that there's only three places in the world. You're either at home or at work or at school. That's one place. Or you're at home or you're at Starbucks. So Starbucks' belief is that their promise is that they are this uniquely comfortable third place in your life, in your busy life. And that's what they want to be there for you. If you can develop a brand promise for your brand that is unique and that is emotional, that helps customers, your customers, understand what the biggest benefit is that they're getting from you, then that's quite important. And then the next two steps are really about, how do you activate that that promise? So if Starbucks promises about being this uniquely comfortable third place, I'll give you an example of some of the ways that they deliver that. Firstly, they are in tune with the pace and the activity and the consciousness of the devices of today's world, meaning you can walk in there with an iPad, with a computer, your mobile phone, and any sort of configuration, and you can log in and you can connect with Starbucks that way. It is a comfortable place for you to get beverages, for food, and also the surroundings are quite comfortable as well. So everything about Starbucks is built to be comfortable. and then you can get the highest level of customization, which we talked about earlier. You can order tea, you can get it hot, cold, with flavors, not, same with coffee, same with different sort of drinks that you can get. They're always bringing new innovations out to help people understand that they're trying to meet their needs. And Starbucks is very socially conscious, and it's very important to them to authentically make sure that you understand that they really mean that. That's something that's important to them. They're not just saying it. And they also have their own language, which we talked about a little bit earlier, with the different sizes, with their drinks. And they're always changing and always evolving. And so that helps you to understand that Starbucks is uniquely comfortable because they're desperately trying to make sure that you feel comfortable in that third place. And the last thing is about the brand character, meaning if Starbucks was a person, were a person, what would the characteristics of this brand be? And so words that they've come up with that deliver on what Starbucks stands for, or their character, is a brand that is contemporary, it's connected, and also it's world conscious. And these are words that become a filter for the way that they come to market. Every time they say something, every time they design something, every time they build a store or deliver a product, they want to do it in a contemporary, connected way that is world conscious, so that you can feel like they are matching your values, because it always comes back to that.
Wow. You've taken us through the deep details of one of the great brands in the world, and thank you for that analysis and that understanding that you're bringing to our listeners. Those tools are hugely valuable. If I'm an entrepreneur listening to you, I'm really excited, and I'm running a small bakery, or as you said, a landscaping service, or I'm writing software code. Maybe I've got a small marketing agency, or I'm an independent contractor. These are all important businesses. They've all got customers. And you said we can brand them all. Just give us a little bit more help about how we can get started incorporating these principles and these insights and values and the brand building framework into some of our projects and some of our relationships with customers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible to do. And then the reason for that is because your listeners started their business for a reason, and it's important to them. And it's important for them to understand why they got into business to begin with. What drove them to start this business? It's an introspection, introspective step. And that is really understanding myself and my own values. And then at that point, then I can project them into my business dealings. I can then bond my values and the interests that I have to my customers and find customers that have those like needs and like values. Does that make sense?
It does. One of the things that we've done in the past is talk about overlapping circles. One circle is understanding what I love as an entrepreneur, and another circle is finding out people who love things the same way I do. And now you've got those overlapping circles, and maybe that's where the insights come from.
Yes. I mean, an example of that is that there's a segment of customers out there that want to support a small business over a corporate company, for example. So you can, in your own city, begin to understand, who are those people? Where could I find them, more of them? Begin to understand why it might be important to them to support a small business in your neighborhood or your city. And if you are a small business, then comes to my head right out of the chute, but the first place that I would start is to start talking to other small business owners, because these are people who understand that you don't work Monday through Friday 9 to 5. You work 7 days a week. You are working 24 hours a day, that you're not only the HR person, but you're also the product development person. You're also the marketing person. You're also the salesperson. You're also the operations person. So the first place that I would look to start selling my small business services to are other small business owners. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to buy my service as their business, but they may buy my service or product as the owner of that small business.
Yeah, I think we can see that in the localness movement to a certain extent. There are many ways in which localness is not a rational economic decision, but it's an emotional decision. I want to contribute to my community. I want to make connections in my community. It becomes a social conversation about how do we all support each other here. I can see that emotional connection and see those insights coming from local businesses just talking to each other.
That's right. And so I think you said talking to each other is very important. And that is that once you develop this relationship with this other small business owner, we'll just use that one as the example, you can then talk to them about examples of you know, struggles that they're having in their business or successes that they're having in their business. And what's happening is you're learning from them, but you're also affiliating with them and you're helping them to understand that it's important to you to understand that and that you want to deliver the best service that you can to them. And so what happens is they feel a kindred spirit with you and want to do business with you for that reason.
One of the things I happen to know about you, Trini, is that you've not only studied all of these techniques and been a consultant to the great brands in the world and helped them with brand building and insights and value-based marketing, but you've personally incorporated values into a family business and built a strong brand around those values, and you've grown that brand very successfully. You're developing a customer loyalty program that's very, very tangible. And I've seen the people who come to your brand and how much they enjoy it. You're achieving some premium pricing success, as we talked about at the outset. And so tell our listeners a little bit about the brand called Graciana that you've conceived and into which you've incorporated these principles.
Right. So our family is in the wine business in Sonoma County, and the winery is called Graciana. And Graciana was my great-grandmother. She was French Basque. And when I was a kid, she used to talk a lot about being thankful. And so that's why our wine is for people who have something to be grateful for. And so it turns out that the idea of gratitude is very important to many folks. And I can imagine that your listeners are, you know, some of them are shaking their heads saying, sure, that's something that we talk about in our family, or that my wife and I talk about, or that my husband and I talk about a lot, because we've achieved some success in our lives. And so it's important for us to be thankful for that or to reflect on what it is that we have. So we got in the wine business because we caught our son making wine in the garage when he was 15 years old. And so here we are all these years later, and the family is still in the business. And it's important for us to ensure that people who buy our wine understand that this principle or this value of gratitude is very important to us, and that's what we stand for. And it's quite differentiating in the wine business to stand for that.
It's a wonderful story about Graciana and about gratitude, and I think it illustrates exactly the principles of value-based brands. I hope everybody can take away that any brand can do it. Anybody can do it at any size of business. I always think of the wine business as agricultural. You grow grapes and you cultivate them, you harvest them, you turn them into wine. But you've shown how gratitude can become a value that makes your wine, as you said, highly differentiated and very relevant to people on an emotional basis. I know you've been doing this for a long time, and it takes a long time to get to where you've got to today. Are there maybe three or four action steps that entrepreneurs can take now to apply this principle, and a few things you'd leave them with about brand building through values and insights?
Well, you're sort of putting me on the spot here because I wasn't sure you're going to ask me that. But yeah, I think that from a brand standpoint, it's important to understand that building a brand is a little bit like building a bird's nest. It's one twig at a time. So what it means is that there really is not one step. There's lots and lots of steps that intertwine to build a brand. So, you know, one is to understand this value, understand the values or the highest values that you're trying to deliver. It's not just about the product, but it's also about the way that your customer can emotionally connect with you and then ladder that up to a highest value. It's also about consistency. It's about your product obviously needs to work. And I think it's about bringing new things to them on a quasi-regular basis. That means there probably is some innovation. And the reason for that is because you're listening very carefully to your customers and listening to their evolving needs and constantly trying to bring them new things that will deliver against those needs. And then, if I didn't say this already, consistency. So that means that you're there when they need you. You are able to deliver on time in a manner by which they're looking for, and you're delivering on that promise, that unique benefit that you stand for every time, because a brand is nothing more than a promise. And so when they're buying something from you, that service or that product, they're really expecting you to deliver on that promise, what that product or service is going to stand for, and you have to deliver on that. So, you know, there's six or seven things right there that we need to do consistently and regularly in order for folks to consider us a brand, and for us to deliver that in a manner by which we can be proud of.
Well, it's great advice. And the one line especially I'm going to remember is that a brand is a promise. And once you make it, it's important to keep it. So thank you for that. I know you're in Sonoma County, but where can listeners around the country find out about and buy Graciano wines?
Sure. Well, we ship wine all over the U.S., and folks generally go to our website. That's the best way to interact with us. We know pretty much every single person who drinks our wine, and so that's one of the other promises that Graciano stands for. So folks can just go to the Graciano website. It's very easy. It's G-R-A-C-I-A-N-N-A, Graciano. And so if you search Graciano with an A at the end in your search engine, you'll certainly find us.
I know that one of the popular activities in Sonoma County wine country is visiting wineries, and I think you have a tasting room. And if we could get any of our listeners to go there. We talked in the beginning of our conversation about value as well as values, which you've been discussing a lot. Can you offer them anything special if they find their way to your tasting room and mention Economics for Entrepreneurs?
Sure. They don't actually have to come to the tasting room. I thought about this because I figured you were going to ask me this in advance. But the tasting room, our tasting room is open from April 1st until December 1st. So folks don't actually have to come to the tasting room, but if they did come to the tasting room and mentioned that they heard the show, then we do have an offer for them. But if they want to call or text us, if folks buy any three bottles of world-class Pinot or Chardonnay or Zinfandel, then we will add in an extra bottle of Russian River Chardonnay at no cost. That's a $36 value. They'll have to pay the shipping, but they just have to call us or text us, and I can give you a number, 707-486-3771. I'm going to repeat that number for folks to get a pen, but it's 707-486-3771. Or if they go to the website and send us an email saying, hey, I heard about the show, and I want to take advantage of that offer, they buy three bottles, and they'll get a bottle of Chardonnay shipped to them as well. They pay the shipping charges.
Well, thank you. I happen to know that your Pinots, especially all your wines, in fact, but especially the Pinots, I think, have won gold medals, best in show prizes at the San Francisco Wine Show, which is one of the toughest in the world, obviously, because it's close to both Napa and Sonoma. Is that a feature or an attribute that you've got gold medal winning wines?
So award winning would be an attribute. But I guess the feature is they just taste fantastic and they're really outstanding. So, you know, we would love for people to take advantage of the offer and, join the wine club, and we'll send them wine on a regular basis, but, we'll send them Pinot, Chardonnay, Zinfandel. We have Rosé, Sauvignon Blanc. So they'll find a great mixture of wines.
Well, Trini, thank you for all of your great insights today. You taught us about insights and how to use insights to understand values. So it's really been helpful for folks who are listening. We'll post some of the appropriate links on our website that you mentioned. And that's it, everybody, for today at Economics for Entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening. And tune in next week when we'll continue to explore the economic principles that can help you make smarter business decisions and grow your business. Thank you.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's MISES.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.